Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today. What's going on, you good humans? Welcome to guest episode number 78 of Good Humans Podcast. This is a very, very fun episode and one that I was looking forward to getting to share. If it's your first time here today, thank you so much for tuning in. Please go and hit like or subscribe over on Apple or Spotify. Make sure you leave us a 5-star rating and leave us a review on Apple Podcast. Also, if you're listening in the first week of this episode coming out, please go over to the show notes and hit that feedback survey. We're giving away two $250 vouchers to the Good Human Factory. All you have to do is fill in a 2-minute survey, give us some feedback, let us know your favorite episodes this year, let us know a couple things that are going to help us improve heading into next year. So if you enjoy the pod, please go and do that. It takes about 2 minutes and you can win some awesome prizes. All right, this week's episode, Dr. Heidi, what an absolute legend. Dr. Heidi reached out to me over email. She's from over in the US and yeah, she's a toxic relationship specialist. This episode was really fun for me. It was nice to give Heidi some space to share her story. She said she probably opened up more than she ever has with people with any other podcast. But yeah, it was really cool to give her space to share her story, which led her to being the toxic relationship specialist that she is today. It's really cool to get to hear people's stories. It really fascinates me, the different journeys we all go on. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of people that can relate to parts of Heidi's story about the relationship she was in, the controlling part of it. And yeah, the way that she escaped it was really heavy to hear, but it was also, yeah, really eye-opening to the way that people have to go through life. She then went on to explain some like really cool stuff about toxic relationships, how we can identify it, how we can get out of them. And yeah, the work that she's doing now, which is really, really special. She has a podcast with over 1 million downloads, which is huge, far, far bigger than my podcast. And yeah, I think you're going to really get a lot out of this chat. I know I definitely did. If you do enjoy it, please share it on your social media, tag both myself and Dr. Heidi. I will leave all of the links in the show notes to get in contact with Dr. Heidi and learn all about the amazing work she does. Let's jump straight into it. Welcome to Good Humans Podcast, Dr. Heidi.
Hey, how you going, Dr. Heidi?
I'm fantastic, actually. I was really excited for this. I usually have to talk about, I do a lot of education, so this one will be a little more fun for me.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be good fun for me as well, getting to know your story, getting to know a bit more about why you do what you do, and then, yeah, talking about the incredible work you do now in toxic relationship awareness and healing specialist. So the first question I do open with is, what are you grateful for right now?
What am I grateful for? Well, I always kind of make a rule that I can't always say my hot husband, but super grateful for my hot husband. And you know what else? I'm very grateful for the work that I do, because I would have never in a million years thought I would be doing this. So when I look back and being able to help people, I'm grateful for that. I'm also grateful for whiskey occasionally.
Lovely.
Like a little sip. Yeah. That was, but yeah.
Oh, I mean, you probably don't know this about me. I actually haven't had a drop of alcohol for 6 months. I'm doing a 12-month challenge, which I've been following on this podcast, but I'm, 6.5 months in, which has been nice. So no whiskey for me.
I'm going to have to do that. So you'll have to be my accountability. Not that I drink a lot, but nobody really needs to, right?
Exactly. It's just having that awareness, which I think a lot of today's conversation is going to be around awareness. But let's get to know you a little bit better. So maybe to kick off, do you want to let the listeners know who you are and what you do?
Okay. My name is Dr. Heidi Brocke. Hardly anybody knows my last name. I always joke it's because I couldn't decide on which one I wanted to use. But my life went a completely different path than I thought it would, as probably most of the people that you talk to. We were just talking before we started recording. I grew up in a little tiny community right by Bozeman, Montana, which has become very famous in the last couple of years because that's where Yellowstone, the series, is filmed. But yes, I was blessed to grow up there. It was a little Christian community. People laugh when I tell them we were not allowed to dance. So people think I grew up in the Footloose community, but it wasn't really that we weren't allowed. We just had older funding and they didn't like it. But I basically went to the same church, went to the same school, saw the same people for the first 18 years of my life. Left there with the perception that that's how the entire world was. Everybody looked out for everybody. You know, it was, you know, very gossipy, but from my perception, it was a very safe place to grow up. I left and started undergrad in Chicago. So I went from never leaving Montana to Chicago for 2 years. Could not decide what I wanted to study. So I went back to Montana, started just doing classes. And my mother said, I think you need to pick a major because you've been in college for 3 years and you don't even know what you're doing. And so this is about how much thought went into my career. I was working for a chiropractor at the time. And I thought, well, I don't know what else to do. So I'll apply to chiropractic school. And if I get in, that's what I'll do. It was literally a 3-day decision. Wow. So I left. I moved to the Midwest, which is the mid United States, and went to chiropractic school with the whole perception that everybody was like the people that I had perceived to have this perfect little life where I grew up. It was in graduate school that I met my former husband. This could be a very, very long story. I'm just going to make it short because I'll get into some of that later. I felt very strange around him from the first minute. I did not want to go on a first date with him. By the 7th time he asked, I felt like I was being mean. So, okay, yes, I'll go on a first date with you. I did not want to go on a second date. Before I knew it, this is out of order, but I was pregnant. I was married. I was moved in. Before I could think about it, I was pregnant again. Then I graduated. I bought a practice. Before I really knew that I was in way too deep into something that I was not sure what it was, but I was too afraid to leave. I had way too much intertwinement. All our money was combined. We had a chiropractic practice together. We had 2 little girls. We had a ranch. We had a lot of stuff going on. And by the time I really felt like I think I made a huge mistake, I was too far in. And I am normally, I'm a middle child, very extroverted, very loud, very the one, you know, that people have to turn the volume down on, very social, always had friends. And I lost all of that during that 14-year relationship. When I was in it, I didn't understand it because it certainly couldn't have been abuse because I had a doctorate, of course, and I went through all of those classes. So there was no way that I would be that blind to step into an abusive relationship. So with the girls and with my job, I just kept busy. I was on autopilot, just doing the list of the things that were expected of me for a very, very long time. A lot of infidelity, a lot of money hiding, a lot of, you know, financial abuse. You can list it, and I'll explain a little bit more later. But I finally got up the nerve to divorce him. I divorced him, and I was so excited because he had been so controlling of me. I couldn't make my own decisions. You know, what to wear, how to wear my hair, what to do with my schedule, what friends I could have. I wasn't allowed to make any of those decisions, and I was so excited to finally have the divorce papers in my hand, and nothing changed. And I talk about occasionally about the day that I ran away from him. I started really trying to stand up for myself, which started pushing things into a little bit more physical violence, pushing and shoving and locking me in rooms and stuff like that when I tried to stand up for myself. And so 2 years after I divorced him, I could not see any way out. Now, looking back, I know I had the free will to leave. I was very scared of him. A lot of threats, you know, that kind of thing. I didn't know what would happen to my kids. I didn't know if I'd have money to make it. All of the what ifs kept me there for a 12-year marriage. But 2 years after I was divorced, I finally had to run away. And in doing so, my choice was either go through the court system and fight him again for who knows how many years to get my half, or sign everything over to him and leave. And I decided I had been fighting for 14 years and I was not going to fight with him over one more thing. So I signed everything over to him. I gave him my practice. I gave him my patients. I gave him my accounts receivable. I let him have most of the property. I walked away with a house that I could sell and $50,000 in credit card debt that he had taken out in my name, a Hummer he had bought in my name. And I ended up leaving my kids. I had two girls. They were 11 and 13 when I left. Hardest thing I have ever done. Worst time of my life. He kept them from me for almost 5 years.
Wow.
So I missed their entire teenage years. And the thing is when you're in this type of relationship, and of course, when I was in it, I didn't understand what it was. You don't talk about it, because when you try to talk about it to other people, unless they've experienced it, they look at you like, well, why don't you leave? You know, well, if it's so bad, how come you're still there? Well, there's a lot of trauma bonding that goes on. There was a ton of fear for me. And so I didn't talk about it when I was in it. Well, then when I moved 4 hours south without my kids. So I spent 4 years trying to rebuild the practice. I couldn't talk about it then either. How are you supposed to explain that you're a mom that left her kids 4 hours away? He had not agreed to sign a parenting plan when the final divorce papers were signed. He agreed to 50-50, but knew that if he refused to sign an actual schedule, that there was nothing that would hold either of us accountable. And so unless I took him back to court, there was no accountability on him keeping the kids from me. I had to learn that no news was good news for the 5 years I didn't have my kids. If there was an emergency, they would call me. When I left, he moved them right into my position. They worked at the office. They were out of school. He homeschooled them. He kept them very isolated from everyone. They did all the work on the ranch. They did all the house cleaning. They did all of that. They stayed until they couldn't stay anymore. And at 17 and 19, they also ran away. And they came down to me. It's very sad. I don't tell you this for people to feel sorry for me, because I understand now, looking back, why it happened. They're 27 and 25 now, and I have a fantastic relationship with both of them. And both of them have cut their father out of their life pretty much. And then I was practicing as a chiropractor here, and I, as everybody does, started feeling a little burnt out. You know, I can adjust people in the dark with my eyes shut, and I was feeling like I was not giving my patients the best quality care. So I needed to add something. So I started coaching, like everybody does as a life coach, making yourself a priority. And as I started that business, I accidentally started using examples and talking about my past. And pretty soon I realized most of the people that were coming to me for making themselves a priority were people that were coming out of emotionally abusive relationships. And so I thought, well, maybe this is the reason I went through it, because when I was in it, I really could not understand how I felt like I was a good person. And I felt like I was in healthcare to help people. And I felt like I was nice and I was helpful. And I didn't understand at all how I could land in something that just felt like an absolute prison. Looking back now, I get it. I just started doing small workshops and started talking about my story. And that was 6.5 years ago. And I retired from healthcare 2 years ago, and I do the emotional abuse recovery, and I help people escape, and I help people recover full-time now from emotionally abusive relationships.
Wow. Your story is just, it's hard to comprehend how difficult a few of the decisions you had to make throughout that journey would have been. For one, obviously leaving your daughters to work on yourself. How was it dealing with, for one, the judgment that you might have got from people around you for making that decision? And then also, how difficult was it rebuilding the relationship with your kids? Did they feel like you abandoned them? Like, I can imagine that would have been such a hard decision to make as a mom.
So it was terrible. It was terrible. But I remember looking at what they thought was a normal relationship, because the toxic personality, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but the toxic personality, once you isolated, so he would never let me see my family. By the end, I couldn't even talk on the phone to my mom if he was around, because he would, you know, make excuses for me to get off the phone or make loud noises or whatever. And so my girls didn't really see anything normal. I at least had a background of, not that any family is normal, but I at least had a background. My parents have been married for 55 years this January, and I have to this day never seen them fight.
Wow.
I'm sure they do, but it just was never in front of us. So I had something that I could look back on as what I felt was normal. And when I looked at my kids, this was the only relationship that they could see. So my daughters grew up thinking this is how normal people have a relationship. And I didn't want that for them, because if they thought it was normal, they're going to get out and they're going to step into one exactly like this, because why wouldn't they? They wouldn't know the difference. And I also looked at myself, and I was not a good example of a mom. I was a doormat. He dictated everything. I stayed for a really long time because I thought I was protecting them. I thought, if I'm not here, all of this is going to come down on them. So I at least have to be here to kind of be a buffer. And finally, I realized I wasn't protecting them, even if I was there. I knew that I needed to heal. I needed to be able to build myself up so that they had a mom that they could look up to. But I also, and I talk to my clients about this all the time, I had to quit protecting them, because if I kept making excuses for his behavior, they would never be able to see his true colors. And I wanted, by the time they were 18, that they could make the decision that they wanted as far as a relationship with him. I didn't want to be like my mom, trying to convince me to leave and begging me to leave. And I did leave that relationship. I left it 6 times and went back. So I really, even though it was hard, I had to look at my kids' future, knowing that I wasn't helping them at all staying there. You know, we talk now, we look back, we don't know if we would all still be there. Things kept getting more violent and worse. And, you know, his temper was awful. So when I talk to my girls now, I carried so much guilt for so long. I didn't get to teach my kids how to put their makeup on or their first date or anything like that. And I carried a lot of guilt. And about 3 years ago, my two daughters and I finally went on a weekend, our first vacation together ever. And they told me that I was not allowed to feel guilty. They said, "We knew why you left, and we wouldn't be where we are today if you wouldn't have." And they said, "Mom," I'm kind of getting tears, so I'm sorry about that. They said, "You know, we didn't call you when we were doing okay. And we knew if we needed you and we called, you would be there." And so they said, I was not allowed to feel guilty for leaving them ever again, because we were all okay. And we all developed into the people we were supposed to. Not that makes me feel any better about missing out on 5 years of their life. But again, my oldest, she's called me 4 times since 3 o'clock this afternoon. What should I make for dinner? What should I wear? You know, it's great now. And they're tough. My kids are tough. They're problem solvers. I don't have to worry about them taking care of themselves.
No, it's great to hear that you do have a great relationship with them now. And yeah, you just wouldn't wish on the worst person in the world to have to go through that. I can imagine leaving your daughters would have been so, so difficult. And now in the work you do, it must give you so much. It must make you so proud that you can help other people break free from these toxic relationships, which are just so, so common. And the hardest thing, I believe, is that as common as they are, it's always quite secretive, and it sounds like quite often, and people that I know that have been in toxic relationships before, it comes back to, for one, like the lack of awareness at the beginning that, oh, maybe this just kind of is normal. But then also, yeah, the person being so manipulative and trying to, like you said, trap and cage people from being able to have people to maybe give them good advice. So now in the work you do now, what's like the biggest challenge in your role now being a toxic relationship specialist?
So the first thing I always make sure that the listeners know is you heard me say earlier, I am a chiropractor by trade. I'm a chiropractor acupuncturist. So I am not a licensed mental health professional. So what I do is I do a ton of education, because if I would have known what I know now, my life and my girl's life would have been a lot different. So because I didn't have anybody that could explain it to me, I am just trying to be the person that I needed when I was going through it. Because when you are in these, you do not have time to focus on yourself, your mental health, or the effect that it's having on you. All you have time to focus on is trying to stay one step ahead of the toxic person so that you don't have conflict and you don't disappoint them and you keep them happy. And so you're always anticipating what their next move is. And for you to be able to take care of yourself, it absolutely does. They do not allow time for that. What you end up doing in these types of relationships is we end up changing who we are to become what they need so that we feel like we fit better into the relationship. And so when you say, you know, it's hard to get other people's opinions, I tried that. And I tried to talk to the law and I tried to talk to social services. But the problem is I still had to work with him every day and I still had to go home and live with him. And he's not going to want to look like the bad person. So it would just get worse and worse on me and the girls if we would try to get help from somewhere. So we just learned that what happens at home stays at home. And then when we're out in public, we're the cutest little family. And my girls were rodeo athletes. They dominated the rodeo world over here when they were very, very young. So out in public, interviews, you know, we're the supportive parents. And at home, it was completely different. And it was very difficult for my daughters to understand. And the thing that I love that you're doing is the mental health aspect. My daughters and I all fight with a post-traumatic stress trigger thing. And I've been out for 14 years and both of my girls struggle. Wow. I try to, you know, I have the education and now they will call me and I walk them through it, but it breaks my heart knowing that they have to deal with all this stuff because I stayed too long. I should have left when they were little.
Yeah. Those self-beliefs and that carry on that come from our upbringing and those habits and those things that we just become normal in our mind can be the biggest holdback for so many people. And it's been a big thing that I've worked on is kind of just challenging my own self-beliefs quite regularly and going like, why do I think that way? And trying to think back to kind of where I created that assumption or where I created that self-belief and challenging that, because we only know what we get taught. And if we're not exposed to better information or better relationships, it does become very difficult to understand whether you're even in a toxic relationship or whether you're in a situation that you shouldn't be in. I've had a guest of mine that's going to come out this in a few days. It'll come out before your episode. This guy, Joel Adams, a friend of mine who's a singer who got in a toxic relationship with and as well, which I'm sure you'll attest for, toxic relationships, I'm sure with a lot of your clients are romantic and personal relationships, but quite often professional relationships can be toxic too. So the way that he went through this thing with his management, he just felt like he didn't have mentors to lead him into the right sort of path, and he had to sign things that he didn't want to sign, but he just didn't have the people around him. So what sort of advice do you have for people who do not really have a support network around them or people to go to when they are really struggling? Because I feel like so many people feel like they are trapped and don't have people to turn to.
So that's the exact person that I have geared my services towards. Usually now, first I'm going to back up. Are we on a time limit?
No, you go for as long as you want.
We have to talk about the word toxic first. Toxic is not a diagnosis. Toxic is an adjective that is used to describe any relationship in the status that it's in that may be unhealthy for you mentally, physically, or emotionally. Okay. So we hear about toxic people and we hear about toxic relationships, but that's not a diagnosis, because what we don't understand is that we are the ones that get to decide who is healthy for us and who isn't. And we get to decide where they are placed in our circle of contacts, right? Toxic relationships do not discriminate. They're in every social class, they're in every gender, they're in every religion, they're in every culture. I started thinking when I built this business, I started thinking I was going to help females get out of toxic marriages. 7 years later, I have worked with friendships, social circles, coworkers, family dynamics, as well as the intimate partner and spouse. And what I do different than your mental health professional is I educate. So my logo, if you've seen it, it has four quadrants. My pillars are education leads to understanding, which leads to your empowerment and ultimately your freedom. You will not be ready to leave or be solid in a decision until you understand the situation for what it is. The toxic person is driven very much by insecurity in themselves. And you and I know that when we feel most secure, give me a time when you felt most secure in your life. It's probably right now because everything's going good.
Yeah, probably right now. I'm in a very good spot right now, which is nice.
Right. So what most people will say is they'll say, oh, it's when my career was kicking off and I had a good group of friends and, you know, I lost 5 pounds and I was working out every day. What makes us feel secure in ourselves is the things we put into our own life, right? Because we feel proud, we feel rewarded.
When we take ownership.
The toxic personality in general does not have the ability to do that. It doesn't matter how much they put into their own life. It doesn't matter how much money they have, what physique they have, how many friends they have, what job title they hold. It's never going to be enough to make them feel secure. So your toxic personality places people strategically in their life that feed them the things that they need to feel secure. That's why it is so hard to get out of these relationships, because they hang on and they make you believe that you're the bad person if you leave, or you hurt their feelings. And the other thing that I am adamant about was when somebody works with me, it is the kind, caring, loving, giving, fix it, supportive, conflict avoided, peacekeeper personality that the toxic personality is going to target. So when I work with somebody, of course, they always find me about one toxic person. But I always have to say, your personality, this isn't the last toxic person that's going to approach you, because your personality attracts them. So I have to make sure they know how to spot them and they know how to handle themselves so that the behavior of the toxic person doesn't affect them. And so when I work with somebody, I do all the education. I don't know if you've had a history of a relationship like this, but we, for some reason, when we're in it, we keep thinking, if we just tell them how they made us feel, and we just make sure they know how they hurt our feelings, and if we just tell them what we need changed, that someday they're going to wake up and act like us. You know, we keep looking at them thinking, how come you can't just act normal? And part of the reason that is because I'm a very emotionally wired person. I would have never gone into healthcare if I wasn't, right? I can only see the world through emotional eyes. So when I look at the toxic person and say, how come you can't just act normal? It's because I'm looking at it through emotional based eyes, and your toxic personality is usually not very emotional. So they don't seem to get it because they don't feel like they're not acting normal.
Yeah.
So when you have two people in what we call a toxic relationship, it's because the two parties involved in the relationship have different goals.
Yeah.
One is in it for companionship and partnership and intimacy and emotional support, or, you know, friendship or whatever. And the other is in it for security in themselves only. But they will never tell you that. They will lead you to believe that their goals are the same as yours. And us empathetic people really want to find the good in people. And we really want to believe the words that come out of their mouth. So we head down the relationship road thinking we're working towards the same goals. And pretty soon you realize you're feeling not good enough and you should wear your hair different and they don't like your friends, and you jump on this treadmill to try and seek their approval and be perfect so that you're not causing conflict and you're not disappointing them. And what people find out very quickly is, where do you go when you're on a treadmill?
Nowhere.
Nowhere. Because by the time you fix whatever they want fixed, they've moved the goalpost.
Yeah.
And part of the reason they do that is, one of the things that makes a toxic personality feel secure is attention on them. And when you are working and striving to be better and to be perfect and to do everything that they want so that you don't cause conflict, where is your attention?
Definitely it is on yourself.
It is on 100% on them. And they don't care if it's positive or negative attention. You know, they can criticize you and get your attention and be fine with it. So basically what I teach is I teach you to see the world through the eyes of the toxic person, because you won't understand the relationship until you see it how they see it. And I remember when I finally was able to mentally look back and really dig through my former relationship, I remember when I figured this out, I was just like, you have got to be kidding me. This is so easy. It's so easy because everything tracks back to the fact that what they do and what they say is for security in themselves. And we are the people in their lives that are supposed to do that for them.
Yeah, it's so interesting, all of what you said. So if somebody's in a relationship and they might maybe think they're in something like this, what are some red flags, and kind of how do you stop allowing others' behaviors to affect you? Because so many people are just trying so hard, yeah, to make that person happy. That might be the person who's bringing the money into the relationship. It might be the person who is supporting them, because there's obviously green and red flags to every situation. So what are some of the red flags to look out for, and how does somebody, yeah, build that awareness?
Yes, and the awareness is one thing, but us being able to choose ourselves, because emotional people always put other people first also. So you have to learn, and then you have to be, you know,
boundaries.
Remind me to tell you about a quiz on the podcast, on the podcast, on my website, that will help people. But some of the red flags or the character traits, the tear you down traits, criticizing, comparing you, competition, name calling, belittling you. Okay. That is a bully on the playground technique. If I can make you feel bad, I feel better, I feel powerful, and I got your attention, which makes me feel more secure. And I remember some of the criticisms that I had gotten in my former marriage. And I kept thinking, where are you even getting these? Because he would attack my best virtues. Yeah. You know, I cannot lie to save my life. My kids laugh at me when I'm trying to fib or hide something. And he would call me a liar all the time. Now, he was a cheater. There was a lot of infidelity. And, you know, he would accuse me of cheating when he was. So he would attack the thing. He would attack the things that I was strongest in so that I would continue to work harder. Because when I was working harder, my attention was on him. The toxic personality likes to instill fear. It's not always fear for your physical safety, but mine escalated to that. It's fear of disappointing them, fear of making them mad. And when somebody fears you, they feel power. And when you're fearful of someone, where is your attention? It's on them. Control in the aspect of, I call it toxic identity theft. They take your decision-making ability away. You go to the beauty shop in the spring to get your hair cut. And you decide, oh, I've been wearing the same messy bun for the last 8 months and I'm sick of it. So you get your hair cut off and you go home and they say, I told you I only like you with your hair long. Okay. Now the next time you go to get your hair cut, you don't go and say, how does Dr. Heidi want to wear her hair? I go and say, how do I think he wants me to wear my hair? When I left, I couldn't order off of a menu. A menu in front of me would just about send me into a panic attack, because it wasn't because he was telling me what to eat. He would say, how come you're having chicken? Or don't you think that's too expensive? It wouldn't matter what I ordered. There was always a criticism or always something wrong with how I did something. So at 35 years old, I'm waiting to see what he ordered. I'm waiting to see what the price point is. And then I'm ordering something that I don't even want, hoping he's not going to criticize it. The first date that I went on with the man that I'm married to now, I couldn't even hardly look at the menu. So I start people out in really small steps in decision-making, because the toxic personality absolutely trains you that if you make the wrong decision, a firing squad is going to show up. And we learn very quickly, if we just don't make a decision, somebody will make it for us. You know, where do you want to eat? I don't care. Because in the beginning I would say, oh, let's go for Mexican, or let's go. Well, he didn't want that. We just had that last week, you know? And so I started not making any decisions because it was easier to just go with the flow. Okay. Well, if I'm 35 years old and I'm not picking how to wear my hair, I was blonde when I left that relationship, because 3 weeks after I married him, he was so disappointed in himself because he was always going to marry a blonde. And basically, I don't know if he really was, but he threw that out there to make me feel like I wasn't good enough and highlight my hair. I remember looking at myself in the mirror shortly before I left. I did not even recognize myself. I never smiled. I never talked. I walked with my head down all the time. You basically lose your independence. You lose your identity. You change your values, your core values of what you stand for. You have to change them to fit theirs so that there's less conflict. And this is something I didn't even realize. I always held honesty as one of my values. For one, I know I can't lie. And two, it's a big deal to me for people to be honest.
Yeah.
And I always said that. Okay, I lived with a cheater for 14 years. So clearly I was not upholding my value of honesty. I was just saying, honesty is my value, but I'm just going to let him slide. You know, so when you come out of these relationships, I didn't know who I was. I couldn't make decisions. I didn't know what kind of clothes to wear. I didn't know what my favorite color was. I had to move and try and build a business and make business building decisions. And I wasn't even able to decide what I wanted to wear out of my closet every day.
Wow.
Your independence, you basically become dependent on them because they isolate you from everything else.
It's crazy how common I think that situation is, obviously with the dynamic of man-woman relationships and the kind of patriarchy that we've grown up in of like the man supporting, which is changing a lot now, but that obviously still come through in so many relationships, which can be a big cause of it. What advice do you have someone for exiting? Let's go that sort of route now. So if somebody's got to the point,
I want to say one more thing. The toxic personality is also emotionally abusive. Okay. I think I had verbal abuse in my head when people tried to explain that to me when I was in it. Well, yeah, he yells and screams a lot, but I always just brushed it off because that was him. He yells and screams every day. But what emotional abuse is when somebody uses your emotions to get what they need. So if they can say or do something to make you feel something, they feel in control of your emotions. So if they, you know, hey, I wanted to take you on a date Friday night, you have a happy emotion. They just perpetuated that emotion. They criticize you, you're upset. They just perpetuated that emotion. The big one for me was he could make me feel guilty. So the 6 times I left, oh, I can't believe you're breaking up the family. And I feel so guilty. I didn't take the time to look and go, this is not a family. I just would go off what he would say that would make me feel something.
Yeah.
And an example of for the listeners, if you are wondering if you're being emotionally abused, pretend Tuesday morning you're in the kitchen. The spouse gets up, they're in a great mood. They come in, they're whistling, they pat you on the butt, they grab their coffee, and they tell you to have a good day. What kind of day do you think you would have that day?
A good day.
Good day. So Wednesday morning, you're in the kitchen, they stub their toe, they trip over the dog, they're mad, you didn't load the dishwasher right, they grab their coffee, they don't say a thing, and they slam their door on the way out. What kind of day do you think you have that day?
A shitty day.
Yes. That is when you are emotionally dependent on somebody. You wait to see what type of mood they're in to decide what emotion you're going to have. And I am 14 years out, and that is still something I fight with to this day.
Yeah, and I think that comes back to what I was touching on before, these beliefs and these habits that get so ingrained in us, learning to challenge them, learning that, hey, you know what, I can make a choice to wake up and show up how I want to today, not based on somebody else. And I think it comes so much back to this ownership thing and understanding and being aware of, wait a second, I can choose how I feel, not this person.
And isn't that courage? Exciting? Yes, and it's exciting when you finally realize that you're in control of it. Because I'll also go through, I'm talking about myself way more on this podcast than I have ever talked about myself.
I appreciate that, by the way.
I kind of go through cycles of insecurity because everything was always my fault. You know, I always had to take the blame for everything, which are more of the red flags. And I'll go through these bouts of insecurity. And we just said, what makes us feel secure is taking care of ourselves and doing the things that we need to do for our own lives. Right. Yeah. Well, I have gone through this cycle for years, and it wasn't until the last year that I realized I have complete control of this. Because when you start feeling insecure, you start looking at the people around you, wondering why they're making you feel insecure, right? Mm-hmm. Well, then all of a sudden I had this realization, oh my gosh, it's because you quit talking to your family. You haven't been working out. You're not eating well. You're not putting the effort into your business that you need to. So I wasn't doing what I needed to do to be Heidi. So I'm feeling insecure and wondering why everybody's making me feel insecure. But that's kind of residual. But it was so invigorating for me to realize that that's in my control. You know, and I get frustrated dealing with post-traumatic stuff 14 years later, like to the point where it makes me so mad. But this, in fact, I just went through it a few weeks ago. I just started feeling blah. I went through my checklist. I was doing nothing that I'm supposed to be doing for me. I was ignoring my friend's phone calls. You know, I wasn't working out. And so I just make my list and I start the next Monday morning and I just start doing it. And the whole cycle's fixed within 3 days. As soon as I start putting back into it.
It's wild. And that's one thing that I struggle with a bit in the mental health industry and the work that I do. It's like, unless somebody's willing to help themselves, it's very, very hard to help them. Unless somebody's willing to implement daily habits into their life, that might only be 1-5 minute things. If you can't do the bare minimum, it's very hard to expect any other outcome than repetitive of what you're doing, which is, and it's hard because you really want to help people, but some people, if they're not in a position to help themselves, it is really difficult.
I think, you know, I have people come to me at all different stages.
Yeah.
And I know from personal experience, it did not matter how many people told me to leave that relationship. I was not going to leave until I was ready.
You're paralyzed. And
I think though, you know, what you're talking about, those people just aren't ready. There's going to be a time that they're ready. And I work with people, their goal is to get out of this relationship. And 2 years later, I'm still repeating the same thing that I was repeating the first day I met them because they're not ready.
But the sad thing is, and the scary thing is, it's too late for some people, whether it be suicide, whether it be domestic abuse. It's so hard. And it's like, how do you get people to make that decision for themselves earlier?
Yep. Well, I repeat. And the one thing that I do is I always tell them, it is not my decision whether you stay in that relationship or not. It is yours. It is my job to get you the understanding that you need so you can make that decision. And then I always, always, always say, if you choose to stay in it, I will still be here and I will support you in it. I will be here and support you out of it because they need the support either way. And when I always have to put myself back where I was, where however the client comes to me, I always take 10 minutes to put myself back where I was when I was where they are, because I can relate to that. And then I know how they're thinking, I know how they're feeling, and it allows me to give them the support that they need from that point. And I have one lady, she's been trying to leave for 2.5 years.
Wow.
And she knows that everybody else thinks she's crazy for being there. And she knows she can call Dr. Heidi, and I'm not going to judge her because I did it. I did the same thing. Yeah. And if I'm the only one that's going to be able to support, and it's because I've been through it.
Yeah.
You know, it was very discouraging for me when I was going through it and my sisters didn't get it. I really felt like they didn't support me. Okay. Now looking back, I'm so thankful they didn't get it because it means they've never been through it.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know what to do. They didn't even know what to say. And now I'm thankful they didn't, because that means they have not been in anything like that. I always tease them that they've never survived anyway. I'm like, you guys are.
Let's swing towards that arm of the conversation real quickly. Toxic family relationships, getting out of a relationship with a partner, a friendship, a work colleague, can be permanent and can be, I mean, let's not say easier than family, but there's so many people who are in family relationships as well. I think one that is becoming quite apparent to me, and something that I definitely do not struggle with, but I think it's because I do have quite a mature awareness around this, is when your parents disagree with the way that you're taking your life, but it's because you've been educated and have different awareness that, wait a second, I don't have to share the same self-beliefs as my parents. I'm my own person. How do you encourage, what's your process on helping people develop stronger relationships with family if they're toxic?
Okay, so the thing that I have to teach people is, because the toxic personality is looking for things like the feeling of control, the feeling of power, looking for attention, and they're looking to be able to control your emotions. That's what they feed on. That's what makes them feel secure, right?
But I feel like a lot of people, a toxic person doesn't even know they're doing that. I just know, like, for instance, it's coming, especially, let's talk like a mother and daughter relationship. And the mother just wants the best for the daughter and always wants to check in with them and always wants to be there and do as much as they can. But for the daughter, that's just smothering them. How do you communicate with the mom? Yeah, it's a hard one.
It would actually be the same exact thing, because really, really what I'm teaching is for you, you have to learn to make the decision based on what's best for you. And in a toxic situation, I teach them to quit feeding the toxic person those feelings and quit engaging with them emotionally. So something like what you're talking about, all the mom's doing is making the daughter feel guilty. So she does what she wants. We all have toxic traits. So we wouldn't necessarily have to label this mother as toxic, because we can all criticize, we can all manipulate, we can all do that. It's when it's in a repetitive, cyclic manner and it's used for manipulation is when we call it toxic.
Yeah.
The thing that the daughter in this situation has to do is go, okay, I'm feeling guilty, but do I have anything to feel guilty about? Parents are tough because we are always obligated because they're the ones that gave us life, right? Okay, but we also have to know that we are in control of our emotions and guilt is an emotion. So just because mom thinks you should do something doesn't mean you should be guilted into it, because what you're doing is you're making your decision based on the emotion your mom is putting on you. You know, and that's what I was just talking when my former would go, I can't believe you're breaking up the family. Well, if I would have just taken 5 seconds to look and go, well, wait, this ain't a family. I just didn't like the feeling of guilt. And that's like in this case, the daughter will struggle with the feeling of guilt. We don't like to feel guilty. What's the fastest way to get rid of the feeling of guilt? Do what the other person wants.
Yeah. You
know, then we at least feel the relief from the guilt.
Yeah.
But you know, I teach how to engage differently, but I also teach, okay, we have to figure out who you are, what you stand for, what you want in your life, what your values are. Because if you have all of those tools, when you have to make a decision and know that you have to make a decision that's best for you, you need to not worry about what mom thinks. You need to not worry about how it's going to affect other people, because it's kind of like a highway. And your life is this way. And you start making decisions based on what other people think or how other people feel or what other people think that you're supposed to do. And it's not the end of the world, but it's like taking the wrong exit. You have to go around 4 clover leaves to get back to where you were.
Yeah.
So I personally, because I know my personality, I have exercises in place that keep me accountable for making decisions based on what's best for me, because I know my personality will look and take care of other people before me. So I have certain exercises I do once a quarter, or if I have a big decision, I have these, because I need to remind myself, this is your life and this is your decision, and how it affects other people, they're going to have to handle it.
Yeah, I think that's great. I love that you brought up values, because I think that's something I do speak a lot about with the Good Human Factory. It's what my whole business model is based around, encouraging people to develop strong values. That way you can be at least heading the right direction of the compass. And I think when you're in a relationship or when you're just making any life decision, if it aligns with your values, it's sending you at least in the direction that you want to be heading in life.
And two, you get, you know, your values change. So I redo one of those discover value exercises 3 or 4 times a year, because as you adopt them, you don't have to have them on a list, right?
Yeah.
But I use that as my roadmap. And
exactly.
Decision-making, relationships, you put everything up against those values, they are going to support one direction over the other direction.
Yeah.
So as soon as I do it, I make a screensaver and I put my top 6 values on my phone, because we turn our phones on 9,652 times a day. And right. So I keep my newest values in front of my face. And then, you know, you have a decision. When I had to retire from healthcare, I put it off and put it off. And I really wanted to, but I wasn't sure financially if this business could take over. And then I was worried about my patients and I was worried about my parents being upset. I was worried about my classmates who would think I turned my back on my degree. And, you know, even though I knew I wanted to do this instead. And I sat down one day and I started that exercise. And before I was 2/3 the way done, I absolutely 100% knew that if I was going to do what was best for Heidi, it was retire from healthcare and do this. And some people didn't like it. And there's sometimes when your value system supports the harder way and you look at it and you go, oh, I know that's the right decision, but it's going to be so hard.
Yeah.
So you go, okay, I think I'll do it this way. Well, there you go, around the 4 clover leaves, and you're going to be making the same decision 3 months from now.
Yeah.
But me personally, because of all of the stuff that I had been through and how it changes how you think about yourself and your self-worth, I knew that for me to stay on track, even 14 years later, I have to have some type of plan to keep me living for Heidi.
I love that.
So I do all the self-discovery with my clients too. We have to figure out who you are, because otherwise, without any identity, you're going to go step into another relationship just so you can have the identity of a boyfriend.
Mm.
You know, when you're in these toxic relationships, when you're with your spouse, you're a wife. When you're with your kids, you're a mom. When you're at work, you're a doctor. When you're with your friends, you're a friend. And they dump you in a room by yourself and you have no idea who you are. So yeah. We quick scramble to get in another relationship so we have an identity. And I work really hard on getting people's identity established before they move on. Because if you know 100% solid who you are and what you stand for, it's going to be a lot easier for you to take care of yourself than if you haven't done any healing and you haven't done any self-work and you fling yourself back on the dating sites.
Mm. It's like if you don't know what your values are and you don't know who you are as a person, it's like having a sailboat and every time the wind blows, it blows you whatever direction. Whereas once you begin to discover who you are, your values, the direction you want to take in life, it's like chucking a motor on the back of your boat and then you can start going whatever direction you want. But until you have that awareness or motor, you're just going to go whichever way that wind blows your sail.
Yep. And you know, these type of relationships, you learn to take the path of least resistance because we don't want to, you know, rock the boat. You just use the boat. We're always walking on eggshells because we don't want to upset, you know, we don't want to wake the bear. So we take the path of least resistance. Like you said, your boat just floats however it's supposed to go. Well, if we don't figure that out, people are going to take advantage of us. And you're so used to taking the path of least resistance that other people are making your decisions and other people are making your life choices and you're not living your life. You're living everybody else's life.
Yeah. So how to break free of that. The last quick little topic I wanted to touch on, because I think this is something that might flip the switch a little bit. How do we deal with somebody who's come from a toxic relationship and best assist them into feeling comfortable and help them through the next relationship? Because it's something that I'm kind of going through a bit myself. My beautiful partner has been through quite a toxic relationship, which she's opened up and shared with me. So just giving her the space to feel loved and to feel like she can be the amazing person that she is after coming from a toxic relationship, because I think that's just as common a thing as, seeing somebody in a toxic relationship is that next step, that next relationship. How do you encourage your clients to have the capacity to allow themselves to love again and allow themselves to be open in a relationship?
Well, you need to talk to my husband, that poor man. I don't know how he made it for the first 3 years.
Mm.
He kind of knew where I was coming from. He had a former marriage that wasn't so good. He really tried to understand it. So you're really going to have to try and understand it. And the part that someone who is dating or with someone that was in a toxic relationship, the hardest thing you are going to have to understand is their triggers.
Yeah.
When we are in toxic relationships, we're very tense. Okay. We're in survival mode the whole time. And if you ask, your partner, she'll remember feeling very, very tense in this relationship. Okay. Here's where my health care comes in. That feeling of tension was there in the very beginning of her relationship, but she did not recognize it as that is your body's natural defense mechanism telling you something's wrong. Because your body's going to know where you're safe long before you are. Well, then after she's in this relationship for a while, she has that tension all the time. And so she gets very used to living with it. Now she's only going to have that tension when something reminds her. So if you say something that her former partner said that really hurt her, she'll have that feeling of tension because her body doesn't know that's not him. Her body doesn't know that's you. Her body just goes, the last time I heard this, you were in an unsafe place. And you're going to feel like, well, what? I just said this, and she's going to have this trigger that makes her feel like she's unsafe. And it's going to be very confusing to you. The other thing my husband did, which is why I feel like I fit on this podcast.
Yeah,
he really pushed me to find my independence back. And because I was so scared that I was going to do something that messed up the relationship, I was very clingy to him. You know, I would go out to the rope and pin and I would help him with his horses and I would go get hay with him. And one day he said, I think we'd been married 2 years. He said, I love it that you like to hang out with me. Well, my farmer trained me to be in his back pocket because if I wasn't there, if he needed me, I was in trouble, right? But the man that I married to now said, I love that you like to be with me, but I think you need to be able to have your own independence. You know, I like to hunt. You need to find something. So he gave me till Friday to pick a hobby. Okay. Well, I hadn't thought about myself for years. All I had thought about was other people. And my former had made me quit all my hobbies. So I'm like, okay, crap. I have till Friday to find a hobby. And so I went through all my old hobbies. Well, they were very triggering for me. So I knew I didn't want to do those. Well, Friday comes and I hadn't thought of a hobby. And I told him, I said, I can't think of anything. And he said, well, when we first met, you told me you wanted to bodybuild. And then I was like, oh, I did. And he said, well, you just start that. If you think of a different hobby, you can always switch, but I want you to do something for yourself. So you can have something for yourself. So I hired a trainer. I did not tell anyone. I was 42 years old the day I stepped into a gym for the first time.
Wow.
And I did my first figure competition 6 months later, and I got my pro card 2 years later. So I have my pro card in figure competition.
Well, how cool. Good idea. I didn't
love being on stage. I don't mind the meal plan. I don't mind the working out. But it was ironic to me that I had been told everything that was wrong with me. And now I'm standing on stage in this little string thing. And there's 9 people in front of me writing down what's wrong with me. But it was so good for my self-confidence and to prove to myself that I could do something and set a goal and accomplish it and do something that was scary.
Yeah.
And so my goal was to get my pro card. And the same month that I got my pro card, I launched this business. And I really had to look. I'm not helping anybody being in the gym 2 times a day. So I set my pro trophy up and I mean, I still work out, but I don't compete anymore because I wanted to dedicate my time to this. But he really pushed me to do that. And he pushes me to go out with my friends.
He
pushes me to go home and see my mom and dad. You know, and the other thing, I was a trained fighter. You might notice this. I was a trained fighter when I left my former relationship because when they fight, they win. And when they win, they feel power, which makes them feel secure. So I felt like I had to fight over everything. And my husband now has kind of trained me out of that. We can have a discussion, Heidi. Well, I would be all like ready to just, and it took several years, but now if we have a disagreement, we hardly fight at all. He will literally look at me and he'll say, we are having a discussion. I love you no matter what. I'm not going anywhere. We're doing is we're allowed to have different points of views. Nobody has to win in this. So he's been very good about making sure that I know I'm safe and reminding me. And I'm sure there's times that he went in the bedroom and wanted to pull his hair out because he's had to repeat himself a lot because it's a continual cycle.
Yeah. No, I feel I think it's very similar. I mean, my partner's amazing. She's done a lot of work and wants to maintain and will continually always maintain her independence. And I want to support that. I want to support her and grow together rather than have somebody just support the other person. And I think it's something that I've learned so much from her, which I think is amazing, is I've been in relationships before and I wouldn't call toxic, but I just felt because of the relationships I'd seen that I kind of, I don't even know how to explain this. Basically, like if I'd done something, I'd done something wrong. Whereas now my partner is like, if you want to do something, who am I to judge that like you want to go do that? If you want to go and stay out and play golf for the afternoon, I don't need you here. Like, whereas once it gets to that, but what about me? Like, what are we doing for dinner? It's like, if you can't support yourself, then you shouldn't be in a relationship. Like once you can support yourself first, then you can really show up to a relationship.
Yep. And you know, I've been doing a lot of research on this losing your identity because I will still go through cycles and you will feel it before she knows it because you'll feel her being very clingy to you. And it's probably when she's not doing what she's supposed to do. And then she starts making the relationship the center of her life instead of a bonus to her life. So you'll have to support and say, hey, why don't you call your friends and go out? Or, hey, why don't you start bodybuilding? or something.
Mine's quite unique. My partner's Brazilian and she's here in Australia, so she doesn't know anyone, but she adds value to everyone. Yeah.
So, anyway, but yeah, you'll feel it before she does.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so supportive and want to watch her chase her dreams and want to support that along the way. I think it's epic to have somebody that can just build with you. But yeah, I'm very happy. I'm very lucky. So it's going to be exciting.
My husband keeps telling me he will be on a podcast because people need to hear what it's like to have to date somebody like us. But we haven't done that yet. There is one of my podcast episodes that you can send to those who are trying to support people that are in toxic relationships.
Epic. I'll leave that one in the show notes for sure. So let's talk quickly for a minute just before we wrap up about your podcast. It's Not Normal, It's Toxic, with obviously you, Dr. Heidi. When that come about, and yeah, over 1 million downloads, which is huge. It's far, far bigger than my podcast. But yeah, how good does that make you feel that you're supporting so many people?
Well, that podcast wasn't supposed to do that because I hadn't talked about it. And then when I moved, I couldn't talk about it because I didn't have my kids. And I started that podcast not knowing if anybody would listen to it, but I had to start learning how to voice what I had been through. So I started that podcast not even thinking people would listen to it. And it just did what it did. And that's how people find me. I did just launch a subscription podcast as well, in addition, where I'm actually able to answer listeners' questions. Because when I'm talking to 1 million people at a time and I don't know your situation, it's my concern that I don't want to say anything that is going to be unsafe for certain people.
Yeah.
So that way people can send in their specific questions and I can answer them much, much more detailed. Certain exit plans, I mean, I had to run away from mine when he went to work. My kids had to run away. You can't just lay out an exit plan if you don't know what the situation is.
Every situation is unique. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just launched that. I was going to say, for those who are thinking they might be in a toxic relationship.
Yeah, let's talk about the quiz.
Okay. Yes, it's called the Toxicity Profile Analysis. It's on my website. It is 106 questions. So it takes a little bit to fill out, but in my programs, I teach 21 character traits of the toxic person. So when you take it, if you would decide to do a call with me, I have different results. I can see how many yeses you answer in each one. So before we're ever on the phone, I know exactly what type of personality you're dealing with. I know what kind of manipulations. I can predict what's going to happen. If you're going to divorce them, I can predict the things that are going to go through the divorce process. So you know in advance. But that TPA works really well, even if you don't have any intention of talking to me. Go through it and read those questions. Because if you've been in a long-standing relationship, most of those things, you have become so used to them that you don't even realize they're abnormal anymore. It's like if you walk into a room that stinks, if you stay in the room, the smell goes away. It doesn't mean the room doesn't stink.
Yeah.
And so just by people reading those, whether they ever have intention of using any of my services or not, it gets people thinking, because they'll go, oh, I didn't even realize that wasn't something that would go on in a healthy relationship.
Amazing. Well, yeah, I'll leave all of this stuff in the show notes. One last question, because I think this is going to be an interesting one. What about changing people who are toxic? Have you done much work where you've had breakthroughs where people have given, they've been in a toxic and then they've told the person that they've been seeing you and there's a lot of things, and or is it just a personality trait that people can't be changed?
Well, I don't work with anybody who I would feel would be toxic to me.
Okay.
So I work with the people who have a personality like mine.
Yeah.
Now, I defend the toxic person a lot. I am not, I run a huge support group on Facebook, and I am very adamant that it is for encouragement and positivity.
Yeah.
I'm not into bashing these people. I don't think they're monsters. They are people too, and they were created this way. And for whatever reason, it could have been a traumatic upbringing. It could be an addiction. It could be a diagnosis that makes them have that insecurity level. So, you know, we always want them to change. We beg them to change. We pray that they change. You know, I didn't like it when I was asked to change my hair to blonde. Wow. So the perspective that I take is, first of all, I don't know that it's fair to ask them to change if this is how they are wired, right? I just know the people that can be in my inner circle and the people that can't. And I don't worry about my former anymore. He has followed the same cycle. He's been married 3 times since me. Every single one of them has waited till he went to work and ran away. He is who he is.
Yeah.
I expect him to be that way. I just do not allow that in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
Do I think they can change? I don't know, but I would like to think that they would be able to have a healthy relationship somewhere, because I feel like it's really sad for them, because I think it's lonely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been an incredible conversation. I'm so, so grateful for it. I've learned so much. I'm very thankful for you sharing so much of your story. Like you said, you have been very open about your journey, which I know so many people will be grateful for, as they'll get a lot out of it. But we're going to wrap up right now. The last question I do ask every single guest, though, on Good Humans Podcast is, what does being a good human mean to Dr. Heidi?
This is a really good question, because this is my business. This is how I make a living now. And you can get very distracted on building a business and losing focus on the mission of the business. So being a good person to me is getting the emails that people say, thank you for saving my life. And thank you for going through what you went through, because I wouldn't have got out without you. So me being a good person is taking my past and helping others with it.
I think that's so beautifully put. We talk about sometimes in life where the first kind of mountain we climb is for us and we learn a lot, but then the second mountain is for service and trying to share our story to help others. And I feel the exact same with the journey I'm on right now, that from a non-egotistical way, like, yeah, being a good human is someone who can share their story to inspire and improve other people's lives. But yeah, exactly that is what you're doing. And I'm so stoked for that. Thanks for jumping on. I guess last thing is, where can everyone find you? Social media, website? We'll leave it in the show notes, but if you just want to give a little bit of a plug to anything, now's the time.
Okay. My podcast is It's Not Normal, It's Toxic. That can be found on any platform. The new membership podcast, you can join that subscription at itsnotnormalitstoxic.com. And then my website with, the about me and all of my services is coachingwithdrheidi.com.
Okay. Amazing. I will leave all that in the show notes, but thank you so much once again. And yeah, hopefully everyone will be in contact soon.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.